Hi, this is Dave Pryor. Welcome to Leading Agile Sound Notes. This is a podcast that we do with the coaches and trainers and all the folks that work at Leading Agile to talk about what kind of things they're seeing in the field. And every once in a while, we've got somebody who's out doing presentations and kind of leading special sessions. And Andrew Fuqua has taken time away from his coaching today. And we're going to talk a little bit about a subject that he's going to be presenting on at two upcoming events. So, Andrew, thank you for taking time out of your afternoon.
Pleasure to be here, Dave.
So before we talk about the events, can you kind of summarize your background? I mean, you are an Agile coach, but like what's led you to that? What's your main area of focus and what makes you passionate about doing that kind of work?
I wrote a blog post a few years back about kind of what led me to Agile, because it's something that I felt that I needed to keep in mind as other people are going through their journey, because it was a journey to me. It was a path, you know, and it started in the late 80s, and it went here and there, and it did waterfall, and it did something that was very agile in 96 that I didn't understand, and I mismanaged the project. And it took me until 99 to really understand agile and get in a better situation where I could have an opportunity to really understand it and get into it, and finally got hooked. And there was a period of time in my life where I didn't have an appreciation for other people who were at that place in their journey. So anyway, I have that blog post, and that's kind of the lead into it. I was in engineering. I was a developer. I was in engineering management. I was in product line management. I did a number of various roles through that period, through some painful experiences as well as some good ones.
When you say that you did things not that well in the beginning, can you give an example? Like what's something you misunderstood or like a bad practice?
So it was 1996, and I found myself managing a team of Smalltalk programmers in IBM. And if you know extreme programming, you know that it came out of the Smalltalk community. And a manager in IBM in the 90s, you have to do ISO 9000, and you have to document your process. So I went to my lead programmer, and I said, "What's our process?" And he said, "It's iterative and incremental." And I didn't know what that meant, so I wrote down on the form "iterative and incremental," and then continued to get out my Microsoft Project spreadsheet and build out the whole thing. And I was very proud of it. I could print it out, and it would cover up a big conference room table. And it didn't help me manage the team, and there was a mismatch between what the organization wanted, between what I was doing and what the team was doing, and the way they were trying to work. So that mismatch and that my lack of understanding didn't work too well.
So that was 96, you said?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So about what year, if you can remember back, you just said that you were trying to manage the team. At what point did you realize that the team's supposed to manage themselves and really like buy into that idea?
Oh gosh.
Probably
2000.
Okay. So that's the reason I wanted to ask is because it took me a really long time. Like even when I got stuff from like a theoretical level, getting it internalized is a very different transition, I think. And I'm glad that it took you a long time too.
Well, actually, you know, when we talk about self-managed, there's when it comes down to the coders and what they're doing day to day, I was allowing them to self-manage the way they did their day-to-day work. I wasn't doling out tasks or anything like that. So from that respect, I got it very early on.
Okay.
But still, when it comes to program management and planning a release, an organization of any size, you typically want someone to do that.
Yeah.
Other than just have it not be done or have the developers
right fumble
it.
Through it.
So,
yeah. Okay, cool. So you're going to be at Southern Fried Agile, which being somebody who's from the Northeast, that is one of the most interesting looking conference websites ever. They got the big chicken or rooster, I guess. Right. And NASCAR.
Yeah. They're really playing it up, aren't they?
It's pretty awesome. So this event is taking place on October 15th in Charlotte, and you're also going to be presenting at another event, the Stack Conference.
Should use them.
So if you come from the project management background, I mean, like when you just described how you were working before, when I went through the, you know, the materials that you have for this session, that seems really like programmery deep in the weeds. It seems weird to me that a project manager would be like all into BDD and you know, the testing.
Well, truthfully, probably half of my years of experience are in coding.
Okay. All right.
And then the other half was in management and other stuff. So I am a techie. You know, my college degrees are in computer science. So I do have a business degree, but in this, nevertheless, I am a techie. But I would have to say, though, this topic is really geared towards the business. It's really geared towards the business analyst and the product owner.
Okay.
And clarifying the specifications so that there's no misunderstanding. It's really about the acceptance test and the acceptance criteria that you would put in your user stories. So that's a partnership between the developer, the tester, and whatever kind of product owner or business analyst you have. They have to come together to write this stuff, to come up with these examples. It looks detailed and techy because it's details.
It's detailed and techy.
But it's not for programmers.
Okay. So
in fact, I'll just jump in, and that's a common misconception is when you think about the name ATDD, acceptance test driven development, you think of, well, that just must be an extension of TDD.
That's exactly what I thought until I went through your slides. I'm like, wait, I don't know what this is at all.
No, that's exactly my point. Acceptance test driven development, ATDD, is so confusing on so many levels. It's confusing because it has TDD in the name and it's totally unlike test-driven development.
Yeah, and I just assumed they were the same because I just figured it was a variant on the name.
And the last D is demo, which really doesn't mean demo is just one tiny little part of it. It really is talking about story testing. So that's yet another confusing part about ATDD. And the other confusing part about ATD is that everybody already does three of the steps anyway.
Yeah.
The only thing that's often left out is the distilling the examples down to
yes.
the bare minimum.
Why would we want to do that? So can you just briefly explain for somebody like me who's got awareness of this stuff but hasn't been deeply using it on a project? Like I've been on projects where people are doing it, but I haven't been that involved with it. What is the difference between TDD and ATDD? Because when I look at the stuff, I went through your stuff, I'm like, well, there's ATDD, and I thought that was TDD, but TDD is sort of a sub-part of that almost.
Sure. So the ATDD cycle is four steps. You discuss the story or discuss the requirement. You distill the examples down into the bare minimum. Then you develop. And then you do story testing or you do a demo. That's the stuff that we do that. So ATD is just spelling out that we do that.
Okay.
And particularly the distill step. So, you know, in Agile development, we discuss a story, we develop a story, and we demo a story. So the ATDD cycle is just saying be explicit about those four steps and make sure you don't miss the distilling. So
what happens in the distilling? That's the part that I'm not totally clear on.
We start out discussing a requirement and we use examples to guide the requirements or to guide the discussion. And as you discuss that story, you come up with way too many examples. You come up with too many positive cases and duplicate cases. And you don't want to implement all of them because it'll slow you down. It'll slow down the testing even if you do automation. It slows down the comprehension and it slows down verification. So you want to boil those examples down to the bare minimum. That's the distill case that you want to do before you go into the development phase.
Okay. And so when you talk about demo, that's us presenting stuff back to the customer.
It's
or demo, the representative of the customer.
So demo is not that's kind of a misnomer, and it's misleading in ATDD. By demo there, they also mean story testing. They mean exploratory testing, break the box testing, UAT. They mean it's a just to have a D word, they used demo, but they really mean a whole bunch of stuff.
Okay.
And then so you wanted to talk about TDD and how it fits into there.
Right.
Right. So if you just one more thing about that cycle of developing a story and getting to demo and doing the whole ATDD cycle is on the order of magnitude of 1 to 3 days, the proper size of a user story. But this test-driven development is a developer technique, and it operates on the order of minutes. So that cycle of write a failing unit test, write just enough code to make that test pass, do just a little bit of refactoring to clean it up, that is a TDD, test-driven development cycle. And that, you know, getting through that cycle should just take, you know, 5, 10, maybe 15 minutes kind of thing, 30 at the most. And you stay in that TDD cycle while you're developing the code for this user story. And you'll do many different iterations of write a unit test, refactor, check it in, write another failing unit test, write the code, refactor, check it in throughout the day. And that's the TDD cycle.
Where would be the easiest, and I don't want to give the whole session away, but where is the easiest place to start if you're trying to understand? Like if I am new to TDD, ATDD, BDD, FDD, all the other DDs, whatever you want to include in there, where's the, and Gherkin and things like that, where is the simplest kind of entry point? Like if somebody's brand new to this, where should they start trying to get their head around it?
If they wanted to read a book, I'd go get the book Specification by Example.
Okay.
If that's what you're looking for, really though, if you think about this, when a BA or a product owner goes to talk to a customer or an end user about some requirement, 9 times out of 10, there's something that's shown, something that's seen. Here's how I do it in Excel. You know, here's the screen and I want, a drop down here. So they're talking in examples, but the problem is that those examples are then the BA throws those examples away and writes a generic requirement.
Okay.
And what does test do when they're writing their test cases? They invent examples for their test cases.
Sure.
And they don't want to show them to development, and development doesn't want to look at them anyway because they seem too procedural. And development, what do they do when they're doing their unit testing? Well, they work with specific examples. The problem is nobody's using the same examples. So if we would just pause and ponder that one concept for a minute and say, we've all come up with examples and we're all using a different example. So let's go to just the little extra effort to record the examples and talk about them as part of our acceptance criteria and use the same examples. We'll save ourselves a whole lot of misunderstanding. We'll save ourselves a whole lot of time. And we'll save ourselves a whole lot of heartache and misunderstanding and mistrust and tension.
Okay.
If we would just do that one thing.
Do you know of companies that are actually doing it that way?
Yeah, I've seen some examples, but I don't see it nearly as much as I'd like. That's why I think this is an important topic. I see people do the verify this, verify that kind of acceptance criteria, and they all don't use examples in them. I see people even use Gherkin. They'll use the given when then format when we say Gherkin. Excuse me, we're talking about the given when then format that could be interpreted by tools like Cucumber. But they'll do that. And personally, I think if you're not going to automate from the Gherkin, it's very stiff. It's a bit of overhead.
Okay.
the word I'm looking for is not coming to mind, but it's a bit rigorous.
Too cumbersome as a process?
It's kind of cumbersome for a process, and the language is kind of stiff, and it takes a little longer to write. If you're not automating from it, you're not getting the full benefit out of it. But even they can attempt to do Gherkin, and here's my point, without actually getting real concrete examples in it. And this may be a time to talk about an example would be for this podcast.
I think that would be great.
To illustrate this point. So yes. If you were going to have acceptance criteria for the podcast, you could tell me something like that needs to be, you know, not too short, not too long, and good audio quality. Okay, well, that's kind of generic, and I probably can guess at what you meant. But you could give me a little bit more – you could be a little bit more concrete and say, well, it needs to be at least 20 minutes and not more than 70 minutes. And I don't know what you would do for audio quality, but – and you
– Well, that's pretty simple. I mean, when you listen back to it, if anybody can hear a lot of hiss in the background or hear, you know, different noises, like last week I recorded one, it's not going to do it right now. And I opened a Sharpie and it sounded like I farted into the microphone. That's that kind of stuff. I wouldn't want that to show up so much.
Yeah. Right. Okay. So fantastic. So those are, and you got really specific with the squeaky Sharpie.
Yeah.
And so you could go one more level deep and give me an example of a podcast that was too short. You could send me an example of one that was too long. You could
okay.
send me
the, so I could say, go, Tim Ferriss is too long, Terry Gross is just right.
That's right.
Okay.
You could point me to those. So, you know, the further you can, well, I was going to say the further you can go, the better. I suppose you could overdo it, but that's what we're talking about. So, you know, give me some concrete examples.
Cool. So coming out of your session, I mean, you're going to walk through examples of all these different things, show how they all fit together. What's the takeaway for somebody like me who comes to watch you give the talk?
Just use examples, record them.
Okay.
And share them. So between the product owner, VA, developer, tester, let's just get everybody on the same page using the same examples.
Okay.
That's
cool.
It.
All right. And so if they want to see you at Southern Fried Agile, which is in Charlotte, North Carolina, on October 15th, they can go to southernfriedagile.com, right? And the other one who's...
The Software Testing Atlanta Conference. URL is softwaretestingatlcon.com.
There we go.
It's a doozy.
Yes, that's just rolls right off the tongue. And if they want to find out more about you, they can go to Leading Agile, and you've got some really awesome blog posts up.
Thanks.
And they can find you on Twitter at...
Andrew M. Fuqua.
Okay. Fuqua.
Yep.
Or LinkedIn, right?
And on LinkedIn, it's just Andrew Fuqua.
Okay. Cool. Thanks, man. I appreciate you taking the time out to do this.
That was fun, Dave.
Thanks.
Let's do it again sometime.
Absolutely.